25 minutes, that's how long the intensified talks about restoring devolution lasted yesterday. And 25 minutes more than the Secretary of State has taken to talk to any citizen in this country through questions from the press recently. She just doesn't take questions now from journalists. The only minister in Northern Ireland, and she decides not to take any questions from journalists on your behalf. Karen Bradley has faced criticism from the NUJ recently for this, and now both governments have gone silent. Yesterday's intense 25-minute talk session, neither the Northern Ireland Secretary Karen Bradley nor the Irish Foreign Minister Simon Coveney made any comment. So what on earth is going on up in the hill? Well, the commentator Alex Kane with us this morning. Alex, morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Morning. And the Sligro Tool editor, Mick Fielty. Good morning, Mick.
Morning, Steve.
Morning, morning. Mick, let's start with you. What can we read into the brevity of these talks?
Oh, well, I think the simple thing to read into it is that there is nothing to report, which is extraordinary because we're nearly 2.5 years into this. I don't know how to put it, but the absence of government in Stormont. And really, she's got nothing to say, nor has Simon Coveney. There seems to be no progress. The elections north and south, I think, sent some messages to all the political parties. It may be that they simply haven't been able to absorb what some of those messages are yet, and that they're not prepared to commit. It may be that they're not prepared to commit to a Secretary of State whose time limit probably runs out as soon as the current Prime Minister's timetable runs out, which is sometime in the summer when the Conservative Party can get around to choosing another leader. So, and that's really all I think we can, that's all we can say about it.
But should the public not be, as the public have been coming on programmes like this and the likes of your website, Mick, and talking to Alex, and they think of all of the problems there are in Northern Ireland, of all of the improvements that we need made to our lives here, education, people on the bottom of waiting lists, that lot up in the hill talk for 25 minutes and then split up again. 25 minutes.
It is extraordinary. And I would quote here a columnist with a single transferable speech of recent times, which is, we need to be solution-based, not problem-based. And in a way, there's your problem, in a sense that the sum total of all the relationships between the DUP and Sinn Féin, who have had something close to exclusive power since the restart in 2007, there has been no focus on anything other than problems. We can't have this, that's a problem. We can't have that, that's a problem. And now the Secretary of State is a problem for the local parties, which is an extraordinary situation, particularly for Sinn Féin to find itself in, that it cannot seem to do anything without getting the right Secretary of State to chair these talks. And I say, you know, yeah, I mean, it is something verging on a farce.
Alex?
I think, Stephen, there are two things that worry me. The first is that it's now 16 months since the last talks collapsed back in last February. Normally, and I've watched this long enough, as is Mick, normally, even though you may not see very much going on above the surface, below the surface, sometimes quietly organised by a Secretary of State or a few trusted advisers, the parties are nudged to get private meetings, chats, look, what's your problem? What's your problem? Can this be segued? Can you drop that? Can you deal with that? Can we live with that? So by the time you get to the talks process, a lot of the stuff, they know the mood music has almost been set because they all know what the main issues are. Whether it's collectively they've chosen not to do it or the Secretary of State hasn't bothered to facilitate, I don't know. But that does worry me, Stephen. They're not, in fact, talking at all. The other thing, and I think this is instructive because it follows through Mick's point about this particular Secretary of State. She's not a very good Secretary of State. She's not, I think she just doesn't get Northern Ireland. She's not actually interested in Northern Ireland. Hasn't read. Because when you become Secretary of State, Stephen, you have advisors whose only job is to bring you up to speed, is to give you the history. You phone people. People like me are phoned. People are chatted with, given different perspectives. So the Secretary of State has a wide range of views and can form an overall opinion. I just wonder, though, with her, Stephen, A, she's not interested, but B, in terms of pecking order, is she in this situation? And it would be true of the next Secretary of State as well. Is it true that she cannot say anything because she is terrified of saying something that annoys the DUP so much that they go to the Prime Minister? It would have been May, it will be whoever it could be in 2 weeks' time, go, no, 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 tell your Secretary of State to stop saying that. Tell her not to go down that line. Tell her not to be doing that. Is, in fact, in pecking order terms to the Prime Minister, is the Secretary of State number three below Arlene Foster and Nigel Dunn? Because if that is the case, Stephen, it doesn't matter who the next Secretary of State is.
Let's talk about Cam Bradley in a moment, Alex, but I guess where I want to start off the programme today is for, as I said earlier, and get your view on it, Alex, for those people who, you know, they literally are sitting on a waiting list now for many, many months, if not more, and they want changes to the NHS here. They're seeing inequality between here in Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK in other areas of their life. They're, you know, we talked to school principals this week, some of whom are cutting down the amount of education they give their kids in terms of class time because budgets are so tight in Northern Ireland. And this lot up in the hill have a 25-minute meeting and walk away from each other. Like, what do the public, what should they think about that?
They should be horrified, because that's the case. And it's not only that they walked up yesterday for 25 minutes and I walked away again. It goes back to my original point. To the best of my knowledge, and someone could phone in and tell me the proof otherwise, to the best of my knowledge, parties are not talking at all at any level. And I know talking to them privately, they will tell you that they're concerned about health, education, infrastructure. There's so many things they want done. But unless there's the wherewithal between, and it has to be the DUP and Sinn Féin because of the two biggest. I think what happens, Stephen, you go back 2 years ago, the end of 2016, beginning of 2017, was a feeling that Sinn Féin were thinking beyond the Assembly. They were tied up in other stuff, maybe with Brexit. So they began to think, you know, is there a moment we need to look at the bigger picture in terms of Irish unity? The DUP, by mid-2017, were happy enough because they thought they had the Prime Minister where they want them. It's almost as if, Stephen, they both concluded that they could live without the Assembly. And when you look at the election results, that seemed to be true. Their voters were not rebelling against them. So I just wonder, maybe the only thing that has changed the dynamics right now, and interesting mixed view in this as well, is the fact that the Alliance, suddenly you have this 105,000 people who are only, that 20% of the Alliance, that's only 2-3% behind Sinn Féin and the DUP. Well, that is maybe just enough in that dynamic to make the DUP and Sinn Féin think, OK, we are getting a message here from the public coming through Alliance, but it's a very clear message.
Mick? I absolutely agree with that. I think, in a way, the climate has changed on them. I think that, added to that, in the Republic, and this goes to the point that Alex just made about the bigger picture for Sinn Féin, in the Republic, they've just lost 50% of their councillors only 5 years after the big surge. And I think that is a very sobering event for Sinn Féin. And probably it's a big ask that within 2 weeks, when they're still in the middle of an investigation or an inquest into that, to ask them to come up with a big play for a Secretary of State, he's simply going to be gone by the middle of the summertime. And we all know no political business gets done in Northern Ireland from round about now until early September. So in some respects, if you take a more pragmatic point of view, it's very hard to lay too much emphasis on an intense 25, by their words, intense 25 minutes. What does that mean? You know, does that mean saucepans were thrown? Does it mean belt was broken? You know, the final result is that neither the Secretary of State or the Taoiseach is telling us diddly squat about it. But I do think the tectonic plates in Northern Ireland have changed. This assumption that we were moving to a border poll is belied by the fact that over 20% of people voted for others. That's world shattering in terms of the political frameworks that we've been operating through up until now.
Here's Brian in West Belfast. Morning to you, Brian.
Morning, Stephen.
What do you think, Brian? I think you all have an opportunity this morning, once again, to send a message to these politicians that if they're going to sit down, walk away from each other, presumably they're doing that, they believe, on behalf of their electorate. They're doing that on behalf of people like you, Brian, and others. So is that what you all want? Or do you want to send them a message this morning as to what is concerning you and what you need them to sort out?
Well, I'm sending a message to them for the sake of all the people of Northern Ireland. As I said it before, Stephen, there's not going to be an agreement. They're sticking to their manifestos, they're sticking to their red lines, and for the sake of the people, direct rule. The government has to turn around and say, next, for nothing sorted out by 4 weeks, we are implementing direct route for the sake of things. Meeting things will be slowly put together again, but we need the assembly will be quicker, obviously. But at least things will be moving, signing off for the national health, for the health service, for the schools and so forth, for the waiting list. I mean, that has to be said, that has to be done. Direct route.
Here's the number today, 03030 80 55 55. Alex Kane, let's turn to Cam Bradley. I see that she's written a piece in the Belfast Telegraph today. The headline, "We must seize our narrow window of opportunity to restore the assembly." Alex, I've got a question for Cam Bradley today. If she's got the time to pen a letter for the Belfast Telegraph, is there any chance she might have the time to actually take questions from any journalist in Northern Ireland? And you had the quite extraordinary situation where Simon Coveney comes up from down south, stands there, takes questions for 10 minutes from journalists, and Cam Bradley turns away from journalists in Northern Ireland and blanks them, will not take anything from them. And now she's writing letters in the Telegraph.
Well, it is an extraordinary situation, Stephen, that for those of us who have to cover this, we're learning more from the southern side of the equation than we are from the Secretary of State or even from some of our, you know, the advisors inside. Because I don't know, Stephen, as I said to you earlier, I she never expected this post. She didn't seek it. It came in difficult circumstances. And I think every Secretary of State would be have that same sort of problem in pecking order. But what you need, and I've said that you and I had this conversation some time ago, if you're going to have a Secretary of State here, it has to be a big hitter. It has to be someone with clout. It has to be someone who can say to these guys, look, I know we may need your votes, but let me tell you this. When it comes to me as a member of the Cabinet and the Prime Minister, I will call the shots and the Prime Minister will accept it. At the minute, I just have this strange feeling with Karen Bradley. In a way, I didn't have a broker chair who didn't do much but never really got to this sort of level of bed. I just have this thing that she... And it's a strange way of putting it, Stephen. I have no reason, I have no hard evidence of this. It may just be a pure psychological thing. She's almost embarrassed to give an answer or anything, just in case within a minute of her giving that answer, either Arlene and Nigel overrule her or the Prime Minister herself says, oh, well, actually, you know, the Secretary of State misspoke. So, yes, go and write articles for newspapers or go and say something nice somewhere or give it an interview to the House magazine. But whatever you do, avoid hard-nosed political journalists, whether it's a news show or Talkback or the BBC or UTV. Go nowhere. Stay away. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you know, people are complaining or whinging about you, just pass the buck on to the DUP and Sinn Féin. Say, oh, look, here's another window of opportunity. I'm doing my best. Do you know if she was doing her best? It would be simple, Stephen. This is how it used to work. I know this is how it used to work. So I guess it would be on the phone to these people. She'd be on the phone to Michelle O'Neill and Arlene and Naomi. All of them. She'd be on the phone to advisors, the people of influence, not maybe in the parties, but people who have influence on the parties. She'd be talking to all of them. She'd be getting them together for quiet meetings up at the end or somewhere quiet. That's what she'd be doing. She'd be getting the pictures together and then saying to them, let's sit down, off the record, chat with the pro. She doesn't do any of that, Stephen. And that worries me as well. She has clearly, absolutely no interest in either what happens in Northern Ireland, or more importantly, for someone who will probably never be in the Cabinet again, doesn't seem to care what her own legacy is going to be. And that, Stephen, having 30 years of watching politics, that is an astonishing position for a Cabinet Minister to be in.
Well, I would add to that. If you go back 20 years, it is very easy to recall the names of the Secretary of State that came in after 1997. They almost roll off the tongue. And they were if they weren't household names before they took over, they were certainly household names afterwards. I mean, people like John Reid, who was stepped down as soon as the Assembly collapsed in 2002, and Paul Murphy, who'd been here previously, was then put in as a night watchman while all the negotiations went on. And as those negotiations came to a close, then Peter Hain, the hardball expert, was put in. Now, the legacy here is not the Secretary of State. It's the Prime Minister's legacy. And Tony Blair was incredibly... he invested in a huge amount, along with Bertie Ahern, into that early peace process. It is certainly no kind of priority for the current Prime Minister, and therefore we're getting second and third rate players being sent in to do what has become partly through the neglect, I think, of this and the previous coalition government, a degree of neglect of the whole Northern Ireland piece. And so we're getting people in who simply, as Alex says, I don't want to be disrespectful towards Karen Bradley. It's the easiest thing to do in Northern Ireland to kick the Secretary of State, but it clearly is not anything like a top-line or bottom-line priority for this government, and it is reflected, I think, in the characters, the list of forgettable characters that have been sent to Northern Ireland since 2010.
Here's Wayne in Warren Point. Morning, Wayne.
Morning, Stephen. How are you doing?
Doing okay, thank you.
I don't understand what they're all roaring and shouting about, because basically is they'll all sit on the fence. Most of our problems in this country is down to that. We keep picking the same politicians. People are not willing to change, but they're willing to complain. And we have 700,000 who choose not to vote, and then we have the rest of them that choose the same parties. Flags are more important than the welfare of their families in this country, and they come on your show and they complain. The only people who can change the situation in Northern Ireland is the people. It's not anybody else. The most powerful thing in this country is your vote, and they choose to put flags above the welfare.
I'm reading here from Suzanne Breen's article in the Beltel today, their political editor. She says Sinn Féin has said that a 25-minute meeting at Stormont yesterday is not the intensification of talks to restore devolution that the British and Irish governments had promised. But the pace of the discussions is expected to quicken this week. Talks sources said the five working groups set up to tackle the stumbling blocks to progress could be reduced to two, with the party leaders playing a more integral role. Like, what would you say to them, Wayne?
My honest opinion are actually gone to the stage now, in my personal opinion, I couldn't care what to do. I just want the both DUP and Sinn Féin out of government, because I think they're too irresponsible.
Well, they're not in government, of course.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I basically want them out completely, because I don't think they can take any responsibility. Most of the chaos we have in our country in the last 3 years is down to them. And I said it before, there's another policeman whose life was attempted the RIA that tried to kill him. These are things that happened 20 years ago before the Good Friday Agreement. These two main leaders have brought us back over 20 years. It's up to the people to decide what they are going to do. The electorate has to take some element of responsibility the way Northern Ireland is.
Alex, can
I can't wash their hands of it.
Alex, I think there is a danger that we become indifferent to how bad things are for some people's lives in Northern Ireland. And I just want to read to you a letter, Alex, that has come into us from a school principal in Northern Ireland. And this is off the back of yesterday's story on the Nolan Show, where we had a distraught parent and her primary seven child has been turned down for six places and for places in six different schools, and they have nowhere to go. And Sarah Lucy Hines, who's the principal of Saintfield High School, wrote to us, Alex, the Nolan Show, and she said the following. This is a school principal. She said, "We're always devastated to not be able to take all the children who apply to come here. We understand how terribly frustrating and worrying this is for pupils and their families. Year after year, we apply to the Department of Education to be granted extra places for our Year 8 enrolment. We are a school that's gone from strength to strength over the last 60 years. Our inspection reports highlight this. It's such a pity, says this school principal, that we cannot be granted extra places and be allowed to grow, as this is a community-focused school who wants to do just that, serve the young people of our community. I chatted with the mother of Molly yesterday. I feel her struggle deeply. Other schools in Northern Ireland were granted extra places to accommodate this year's intake back in March, but we were not. I understand how difficult this situation is, and as a school, we'll continue to fight and grow and expand our numbers to best meet the needs of our young people." Alex, the reason I've read that to you today is there's just an example of an on-the-ground but real-life issue facing a school principal. We heard from another a couple of weeks ago. They can't afford to buy toilet roll for the kids in their school, Alex. and yet these political parties can't govern Northern Ireland.
I get that all the time. My daughter Lila is at a primary school. I talk to teachers and the principal there. I just talk to people just who see, stop you, Mick, look at this. People just stop you in the street and want to vent. And I talked to a man, this is about 6 months ago, Stephen, and it stuck with me because of the way he said, I met him in a hospital when I was up visiting someone else, and he was very distressed about his wife and so on. He just ended and said, apologize. He's so apologetic for taking up my time with his story, and he had tears in his eyes. He just looked at me and said, look, Mr. Kidd, can you find a way of telling those politicians that cancer, and this is, I presume, was what the research is, cancer doesn't give a damn if you're a unionist or a Republican. Cancer doesn't give a damn who the First Minister is. These guys have to realise that when they did their deal, or whatever you lot call it, their agreement was to govern for all of us to help. And sickness and misery and bad education are not about individual party political things. They're about people. And you know, Stephen, I've passed on my conversation, and every politician you pass says, oh, absolutely right. And immediately, within a few seconds of ending the story, it's, oh, well, Alex, look, we would be back up tomorrow if it wasn't for. And even listening to, you know, at the end of the intensification meeting yesterday, Michelle O'Neill was saying, well, this is still about the implementation of previous agreements. We need radical change. The DUP, Ireland, said, we're up for it already. Robin Swan, there's a small window of opportunity. What I didn't hear yesterday, Stephen, what I haven't heard in the past 16 months, and again, I know I'm cynical, but I follow closely, I'm not hearing any sign from any politician in any party that getting the government up and running, getting an executive governing Northern Ireland, not stopping the border poll or anything else, but actually getting schools better, getting hospitals better, getting roads done, getting employment sorted out. I'm not hearing one single politician telling me that that is the ultimate priority.
Does that suggest, Mick, that they're out of touch with what matters to people, or do the election results suggest that they are very much in touch with what matters to people?
No, I think the exact opposite. I think and Alex brought this up, and I totally agree with what he's saying. You need to look at those numbers. Those numbers suggest that there are people walking off the pitch from constitutional politics. They're fed up listening to talk about a border poll that is all we talked about, coming, never comes, and is very unlikely to deliver anything like what is promised alongside it. Also, the DUP has done okay out of this, but its custodianship of unionism over the last 10 to 12 years has made unionism more unpopular than it's ever been since the Ulster Unionist Council got together back in the 1800s. And you know, so these guys are presiding over the political failure of their own macro projects. And people are voting with their feet and saying, no, we want another way. They're going in smaller numbers to the Greens, in larger numbers to the Alliance Party. And to some extent, and I will say this for the SDLP, although it was a marginal increase, they also managed to increase their vote, even as the Ulster Unionists went down. And that's partly because they had a message of moderation that the Ulster Unionists neglected. The Ulster Unionists should be in lockstep with the SDLP in terms of its growth curve. It's going downwards because it's chosen to go off to the extreme ends of the DUP. And people are suffering. You know, there's a whole mess around the 11 plus that was never resolved by either the Sinn Féin, who initiated it, or the DUP, who had control of education over the last number of terms. And people in their schools and in their hospitals are understanding that the real block to improvement is a political class that has simply stopped listening to the voters. And the political parties who've begun or never stopped listening to them, and I have to say, make a special mention for the Alliance Party here, basically are beginning to prosper. It's interesting that people now, even in West Belfast...
Do you think the Sinn Féin and DUP are at all worried, though?
Yes, I do.
Do you?
I do. Yes, I do. I think it's never been off the DUP agenda to try and get this thing back up again. I think they've been compensated for by having a senior position in UK politics. That may or may not come to an end when the new Conservative leader is chosen. But there's always been a secondary game to try and get back into Stormont. I think the people who are mostly worried at the moment are Sinn Féin, because they shipped serious losses in the south. And that is a serious dent to the strategic plan of getting power north and south. And I think there's only one game for them to play, and there's only one place for them to go, and that is back into Stormont and to pick up some of these responsibilities. All they need to do is to appoint the next Deputy First Minister, and we're all back in, and we're all back in play. Whether they've got a game to play that satisfies the needs that have been intensifying through the vacuum, that is another question entirely, and that'll be a question for the next Assembly election, which will not be a pretty picture either for unionism or for Sinn Féin republicanism.
Here's Tom and Clinchy, 0330 80 55 55. Morning, Tom.
Good morning. Absolutely agree with the headmistress of Saint Field. My grandson has just got his place in a local grammar school. And in your day, Stephen, and in my day, you sat in a classroom in your own school and you did an exam. And then Sinn Féin got the responsibility for education. So now my grandson went to Campbell College in Belfast, doesn't live in Belfast. He did three exams for the grammar schools and two exams for the co-educational schools. And out of the three exams, they take the best of the three. Then they factor in male or female. Then they factor in the month that he was born. Then they factor in the amount of children doing the exam. And last week, since October until Saturday morning, he has been waiting to hear the results. Now, if that's progress, God help us all. It's a fact of life that Sinn Féin do not attend Westminster, that Sinn Féin brought down the Assembly. Martin McGuinness was dying of cancer. So let's be honest about it. He was dying of cancer. He was no fit state to work. And he brought it down because he wanted to bring it down, because Sinn Féin want to bring it down. So why don't people just look at what's going on and say, right, boys, give the minor parties, give everybody a percentage of the big ones, health, education, transport, give the minor parties, give them the say over other issues like roads and issues like that, and let them go back to work and make some decisions. Because my God, how many churches would carry out same-sex marriages to start with? The church, the DUP church, Methodist church, Elam church? I don't think so. So how many of these people, how many of these churches would carry out same-sex marriages? Why are we no government when at the end of the day, I don't think most of the churches would carry out a same-sex marriage? As for the Irish language, I booked my wife's car for MOT this morning. It's in Irish. It's in English. It's not an issue. I wouldn't know how to order a fish supper in Irish, or do I want to? And I would say most of the population don't want to either. So put picture food up and all the rest of it, and we can point at it. It is crazy. It is a disgrace. And they should run it from direct route and get on with it. And quite frankly, like everyone else, pay no salary. And as for the offices, Square and Cumber has a DUP in it. I've never seen a soul in it in my life.
Well, I have. I'm in that square quite often.
You get the fish supper in there?
I'm in that square quite often. In Cumber.
Are they asking them when they go back to work then?
I see that DUP office quite a lot. I haven't been asked in for a cup of tea, but I see it quite a lot. But sure. Tom, thank you very much.
You wouldn't even get in for me 3 days of the morning.
Thank you, Tom. Let's
take care.